The next matter on this morning's calendar, Dialysis Clinic Incorporated versus Tax Commissioner of Ohio. Mr. Callen?
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Sean Callen from the law firm of Dinsmore & Scholl. I'm here today on behalf of the appellant, Dialysis Clinic, Inc. I will refer to the appellant as DCI. Before I begin, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I might, and I'd also like to cede 3 minutes of time to Mr. Chad Riedler, amicus counsel. Your Honor, DCI is before you today asking the court to reverse a decision of the Ohio Board of Tax Appeal, or the BTA. In this case, DCI sought a charitable exemption for one of its dialysis centers located in Butler County. I'm going to refer to that center, that clinic, as the Westchester Clinic. In the proceedings below, the tax commissioner denied DCI's application for exemption. On appeal to the BTA affirmed the tax commissioner's decision, and it is that decision by the BTA that DCI has appealed to this court. Now, this case centers on the application and interpretation of two statutes, 5709.12b and 5709.121. Each statute provides a different mechanism or pathway to exemption. So what you have before you are two ways to find DCI exempt from real estate taxes and two ways to reverse the the BTA.
Mr. Callen, are you suggesting that the provisions in 121 are broader than those in 5709.12?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe they are. And I do believe that with respect to the BTA's analysis under 121, I really think the BTA got this one wrong. And I would like to talk about 121 in some detail. 121 involves a three-part test. To qualify for exemption under 121, an institution, a charitable institution, must own the property at issue. The property at issue must be used in furtherance of or incidental to the charitable institution's charitable purpose. And finally, it cannot be used with a view to a profit. So under 121, the analysis really turns on the identity of the applicant. Is the applicant a charitable institution? And if it is, then yes, the test is more lenient. And again, I would like to talk about 121 and go through the three-part test if that would suit the court. First, DCI is clearly a charitable institution. The record below on this issue is overwhelming. And frankly, I found the BTA's decision that DCI is not a charitable institution to be somewhat baffling in a way, but beyond that.
Well, DCI is a 501c3, am I right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So that makes it a tax-exempt organization.
That's correct, yes.
And the profits go to the University of Cincinnati. Am I right about that?
That's correct with respect to DCI clinics in the Cincinnati area. When DCI is fortunate enough to generate excess revenues, revenues over expenses, those revenues can be used in one of two ways. They can either be used to fund research projects into end-stage renal disease, which is the disease that DCI treats. The remainder of the profits go into further fulfilling DCI's mission to allow DCI to expand its treatment network.
But the BTA doesn't quarrel with either the 501c3 status or the fact that the profits go into either additional research or that they're delivered to, in this case, the University of Cincinnati. Am I right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the focus for us isn't the nature of DCI, but rather it's whether or not there's a discrimination policy with respect to the ability to pay. Isn't that, or have I missed it? Is that the key issue for us?
No, Your Honor, that's a very key issue. And what the BTA did in its decision is under 121, the charitable institution analysis is a totality of the circumstances analysis. And what the BTA did was it focused on one circumstance. And namely, that's the level of free care that DCI provided at the Westchester Clinic. And I'll tell you right now, it's not that great a number, and I'll tell you why as well. But the policy itself, yes, the policy exists. It requires DCI to bill patients and collect money if possible. That policy is driven by two things. First, the Medicare regulations require it, and in our reply brief at pages 4 through 8, we detail those Medicare regulations in detail. But it's simply a requirement of the Medicare system. Secondly, DCI is a charity, as you point out, is a 501c3 charity. It has a duty of stewardship over its charitable assets. If it gives charity to a patient that should not receive charity, that means that that same charitable asset is not available to someone who might truly need it. And the IRS expects all 501c3 organizations to steward their assets appropriately.
So the purpose of the policy, in your view, is to try to assure that only those in the greatest need receive the charitable care and not those who don't need it.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I have two questions for you. Have any patients been turned away from DCI for their inability to pay, or has anyone been denied service? Does the record show anything about that?
No, the evidence is unrebutted and undisputed that that never happened.
Could DCI change its policy and say that we will provide care to those who don't have an ability to pay?
It cannot change its indigency policy and still comply with the Medicare requirements.
What would be the result if it did change the policy to a rule that says no one will be denied service based on their inability to pay? What effect does that have on that? That seems like that would cure the BTA's problem, but what are the residual unforeseen consequences of such a policy?
Well, such a policy would very possibly lead to potential civil and criminal sanctions under the Medicare scheme. And again, that's all set out in the reply brief. It would also lead to issues with respect to any potential IRS audit. Now, a policy is just that. It's a policy. It's something written. If you look at what DCI does, and what it does is very much documented in the record. It has never turned away a patient.
I've already established they haven't turned anyone away, but I don't understand why they have to have a policy that says, or why they can't have a policy that says we won't deny service based on inability to pay.
That is just not consistent with the requirements of Medicare. The anti-fraud statutes under Medicare prohibit waiving even copays under Medicare. They prohibit advertising, reduced cost or free care. Other regulations require DCI to undertake collection efforts, including phone calls and other collection devices. And if you look at DCI's policy on the collection issue, it is almost verbatim what is required under the Medicare regulations. So DCI is not undertaking any collection action that's not envisioned and required by the Medicare system.
Is this language incorporated someplace from a Medicare regulation that we could find somewhere in the federal code or the federal code of regulations on establishment of an indigency policy for charitable institutions?
Yes, Your Honor. The Medicare regulation and the citations thereto are contained in pages 4 through 8 of our reply brief, and that is where you would find the federal citations to those sections.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Callan, aren't we talking about two separate things? I mean, we're talking about Medicare and the 501c3, which is all federal, related to federal taxing. And here we're talking about the Ohio State property tax, which really has maybe potentially different rules. As I understand it, it seems to me that the Medicaid situation almost prevents you from being a charitable institution under state law?
Well, I don't believe that to be true, particularly under the analysis under point 121. Again, once you are found to be a charitable institution under point 121, the second two prongs of the test fall fairly quickly and easily into place. The second prong of the test is that the property must be used in furtherance of or incidental to the charitable purposes. Well, here, the clinic at issue houses DCI's dialysis services. So the intersection between the use and the charitable mission is quite close. And then, and then third, of course, it can't be used for a profit, which in this case it's not. The evidence is that it loses $250,000 a year. So this case really turns on whether DCI is or is not a charitable institution. And you are correct that the analysis under Internal Revenue Code Section 501c3 is not the same as it is under the Ohio statutes. However, looking at the cases, in looking at the BTA's decision, the BTA's decision rests solely on the idea that the Westchester Clinic did not provide enough free care. That is nowhere to be found in any of the tests ever enunciated by this court. Under the statutes and under this court's holdings, just recently in the Church of God case, this court talked about how to apply the totality of the circumstances test in a healthcare case. And what the court said is that the provision of medical or ancillary healthcare services qualifies as charitable if those services are provided on a nonprofit basis to those in need without regard to race, creed, or ability to pay. And what the evidence in this case shows, and it's undisputed and unrebutted, is that DCI is a nonprofit charity and it provides its services without regard to ability to pay. So it satisfies the test that's just enunciated in Church of God. And on those facts alone, it should be found to be a charitable institution under 121. And again, as I said, once having reached that conclusion, then prongs 2 and 3 of the test fall pretty quickly in line.
So you would have us say nonprofit equals charity?
No, nonprofit when that provider is providing services without regard to the ability to pay.
We don't look at the issue of whether there's reimbursement pursuant to Medicare and whether there are write-offs based on any industries, for example, bad debt. That kind of idea doesn't factor into your suggestion of how to look at charitable institutions.
No, it doesn't really, and here's why. The problem with looking at that is you're turning the charitable analysis on its head. Right now, in the way we've always looked at it, is there's two ways to get an exemption. One, you look at the specific use of the property, or you look at the nature of the institution, and is it charitable? If we start looking at, you know, in analyzing Medicare reimbursements and Medicaid reimbursements, what we're doing is we're now looking at the population served, and we're allowing the population served to drive the provider's right to an exemption. And there's nothing that the provider can do about who walks in its doors. And this is a particular problem in this case, and it's unique in this case, in that Medicare has a specific program for end-stage renal disease. That means that everyone who walks into DCI's facilities will very likely have health care coverage of some kind. So the opportunity to give free care, as the tax commissioner demands, is very minimal. And by the way, that's a situation that we're going to see replicated across the industry very soon if the federal health care system, as passed, survives the legal challenges against it and is actually implemented. You're going to have something that very nearly approaches universal coverage across the board. Mm-hmm. And in that point, the opportunity for purely free care, as the tax commissioner wants, will be very slight.
And then taking it a step further, if in fact that does happen, and we accept your argument, that would mean that these providers who may be getting Medicare reimbursements and yet providing the care that you're talking about, that their property then becomes tax exempt, which would take them out of the base for property taxes in Ohio, correct?
Well, for instance, in the record, there is a company called DaVita, which provides the same service. It provides dialysis services. They are not nonprofit. There is a private benefit that is generated by its operations. So I think you can very clearly distinguish between DaVita, not only on where the profit goes from its operations, but DaVita will not take every patient regardless of its ability to pay. It is a for-profit provider. It will not operate in the same way as DCI does on the front end in its admission of all, regardless of ability to pay. And it certainly won't operate as DCI does on the back end, using its proceeds to fund research and further expand the charitable mission, further serving more people, allowing more people access to dialysis services.
Counsel, as I understand your assertion here, the reason that the DCI has this particular problem is because all of your patients qualify for Medicare or Medicaid, and therefore Medicare and Medicaid rules don't comport with the longstanding definition of charitable under the real estate property law. Is that essentially it? And so you need us, or need a decision that equates 501c3 charitable with charitable under the real estate law?
No, I'm not asking the court to do that. And I do believe that DCI's operations do comport with longstanding Ohio law as it relates to charitable tax exemptions. Again, the touchstone to charity under the Ohio precedents is the facility open to all? That's
always
without
ability to pay, and you've said Medicare and Medicaid won't let you do that. At least that's my understanding of what you said.
I'm sorry if I
and you have a policy that says no, you can't provide service without regard to ability to pay, but you have a practice that accepts patients without ability to pay. So we have really kind of a real jumble here, don't we?
Well, the way it works in practice is that a patient will come in, and if they are indigent or feel that, you know, they may be indigent under the rules, they will fill out basically a financial aid form, and we'll go through that, and we'll identify that patient. Now, if that patient is truly indigent under the federal guidelines, that patient won't be billed. However, if they are not indigent, they will be billed as required by the Medicare regime. But that is not inconsistent with Ohio case law with respect to charitable tax exemptions. Again, the question is the facility open to all regardless of ability to pay? And it is. You just have to fill out some paperwork.
Well, I understand your explanation, and it's a good one, but the policy says that DCI retains a right. In other words, they don't necessarily refuse treatment. They retain the right to refuse treatment to those who are without the ability to pay. Why do you need to say that? Why do you need to retain that right if, in fact, you do provide service, if, in fact, they are indigent?
Again, the policy, as you point out, it says what it says. Could it be changed, that particular policy? Perhaps. But the cases all say that you look to what the organization does and how it operates. And when I cite, for instance, to the Articles of Incorporation, which very clearly state that it's DCI's mission to provide dialysis services without regard to ability to pay, that it's DCI's mission to fund end-stage renal disease research.
So this reservation of a right in the policy that the board focused on may be at odds with what the mission of the Articles of Incorporation say DCI's purpose is.
That's correct.
Counsel, if a patient appeared for treatment and had no private resources, ability to pay, no private insurance, no funding, and did not want to cooperate with the process of application for federal funding to reimburse, would your institution, DCI, still treat that patient?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. And that
has
does,
that happened?
That does happen. That does happen, and it's in a record, and I will try to find a cite to that testimony and let you know in rebuttal. But that does happen. It was discussed at the hearing, and it absolutely does occur.
I got the impression from our materials that didn't happen. So if you do have that, I'll wait to hear on rebuttal.
Mr. Kellen, thank you.
Thank
You've
you.
Exhausted your time. We'll allow Mr. Riedler 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Chad Radler on behalf of the Ohio Hospital Association. As Mr. Callan explained, the BTA's decision below broke with what's really been an unbroken chain of decisions from this court holding that the touchstone in the charitable context is whether a facility is open to all without regard to ability to pay. And the imposition of a charity quota, which is what the BTA relied on in rejecting this application, is inconsistent with the court's precedent, and it threatens not only the existence of the dialysis clinic, but also all nonprofit hospitals across the state. And there are really three critical points I'd like to focus on. The first is that this new test that the BTA has imposed, again, is inconsistent with the court's precedent and focuses exclusively on who is coming through the hospital door, as opposed to what this court's historic test has always been, and that is whether the doors are open to all. As Mr. Callan explained, a hospital can't control who's actually coming in the door, but it can certainly control its policy as to who it's going to accept. And the evidence in the record here, as I think Justice O'Donnell pointed out, is that no patient has ever been turned away, not only from this facility, but from all the other facilities in the DCI chain. And in fact, getting to Justice O'Connor's question that she asked at the end, there's evidence in the record that other facilities in the Cincinnati area under the DCI, under part of the DCI chain, do treat numerous patients who have no care whatsoever.
Does this facility do that?
This facility has not had patients come in that do not have any form of coverage.
And okay, part of so this piece of property at this facility is what is at issue here, though, right?
That's correct.
But you're saying other locations will treat an indigent who does not cooperate with access to federal funding, will not fill out the paperwork, but will continue to treat, but not this site.
Well, just so kind of, this is a critical point. And no, this site will treat everyone who comes. That's not only consistent with their charter, but also the actual practice. The commissioner at page 37 of his brief points out that you have to look at the actual practice at the facility to determine whether they're actually a nonprofit.
I thought the issue was with respect to the policy that says the reservation of right to refuse treatment to those without ability to pay.
That's correct. That's the indigence policy that DCI has in place, but its charter says otherwise. And
yes.
And most importantly, and again, as Mr. Callan explained, that's done largely by operation of Medicare laws to make sure that the hospital or the facility is not running afoul of federal kickback laws.
Do hospitals have a similar kind of reservation of right in their policy for treatment?
I think typically, of course, this facility focuses narrowly on the
yes,
ERSD facility.
Yeah, yeah.
I think typically hospitals have adopted in this state a policy that they're open to all, and I'm not sure that many of them have that specific language. They have a policy based upon this court's cases that the facility has to be open to all, and they will treat everyone who comes to the facility regardless of ability to pay. That's exactly what happened here, by the way, at the clinic.
Concern on behalf of the Amicus Hospital Association is that the BTA has said 1.27% is insufficient to meet the standard of providing care to all. Do I understand that
that's correct. That has not been historically a part of Ohio law.
You're concerned that if you now have some quota or percentage that of indigency that you have to have, your own exemption might be jeopardized.
Absolutely. The hospitals around Ohio have not conformed their policies to meet a certain percentage, but just to be open to whoever comes in the door. And of course, much of that.
And so you would have us rectify the determinations of the Board of Tax Appeals here to eliminate a certain percentage or a quota that must be met, but rather to have a policy showing that all can be treated.
Absolutely, and that's rectifying what was done below, but that's wholly consistent with what this court has done in a chain of cases over time. And also, I do want to focus one last point on the fact that charitable means a number of things. The BTA disregarded the full array of items that are included in charitable care by a facility. That includes research, education, and community outreach or prevention programs. The BTA ignored all of that.
Other aspects of charitable activity.
Yeah, so
the
charity care
hospitals
is one, but there are many that are included. And if I could just finish with Justice O'Connor's question, she asked about this facility as compared to the other facilities. And I think it's important to keep in mind that under point 121, the initial test, of course, I think we should all agree is whether the DCI itself as a whole is a charitable institution. It plainly is. It's nonprofit, has no shareholders. Half of its revenues that it has go to research, and the rest goes into the facility. And it opens facilities all around the country, including five in the Cincinnati area. Some of those are located in areas where there are more patients who are likely to come in without any kind of coverage whatsoever. But this facility issue happens to be an area where they have yet to have a patient who doesn't have coverage. But the point, the critical point is that this facility is being used incidental to the overall mission because, one, it will accept patients without coverage, and two, any proceeds go back to the not to private shareholders, but to the overall organization which spends them on research.
So what you're arguing here is let's not look at the actual population who's treated. Let's look at the policy that if someone happened to show up in Westchester that had no means to pay and didn't want to fill out the paperwork, they would take that person in, and that comports with the mission and the actual activity at their other sites in neighborhoods that may have people who are that fit that description.
That's correct, Justice O'Connor. In fact,
okay. Let me just then ask: are the property taxes paid as a conglomerate here, or isn't it each site has to deal with each locality and pay property taxes?
It's assessed, I believe, based upon each site.
Right.
But the test under point 121 is to look first at the overall facility, and then to look whether that individual facility is carrying out a purpose that's supporting or incidental to the overall mission. Clearly that is happening here. And I would just point out that in other cases, the court has found that administrative facilities where there's no health care whatsoever going on, those have qualified for the exemption as well because they are promoting the overall purpose of the organization. Here we have an actual facility that's carrying out critical dialysis work. It absolutely should be covered under the exemption.
Well, I have you at the podium before your 3 minutes expires.
Thank you,
Mr. You indicate that this decision appears to go away from longstanding case authority in the state. Just give me your strongest case that you think would help us or guide us to get it back on track if we agree with your position.
Sure, I have three cases: Church of God, Vic, and the O'Brien case from almost 100 years ago.
Okay.
All of those cases have made clear that it's open to all.
Thank you.
Mr. Redler, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Pratt.
Chief Justice Brown, and may it please the court. The BTA, in its decision affirming the tax commissioner's denial of exemption, borrowed from the state of Illinois' Provena decision and made a very poignant point. Charity is the act of kindness or benevolence. There is nothing particularly kind or benevolent about selling somebody something. And that is what we have at issue here. Despite the fact that DCI acknowledges it does not provide any charity care, or at best, de minimis charity care, and I mean less than 1% of its national services constitute indigent patients who are not eligible for reimbursement.
Well, Mr. Pratt, what amount of free or reduced care would be sufficient to render a nonprofit charitable activities? What would that legal test look like?
The court has been very careful in its decisions that there is no absolute amount. Everything has to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. And I would respectfully disagree with counsel that the BTA sets some sort of minimum threshold here. But that being said, we can look at the case law that has dealt with this issue, and there is a pattern. And it is a pattern that each time the charity care that has been afforded by a particular healthcare institution falls below a level of 2%, the court has affirmed the denial of an exemption for that particular facility.
Do we look at other purposes such as the research and development of treatment as charity, or does that not qualify?
I think you can look at those issues under a totality of circumstances standard if at first there is some level of free care, and this is where I think DCI totally misrepresents what the court means by the totality of circumstances test. Each time the court has applied that, there has been some reasonable level of charity care being provided by the healthcare provider. What the court has done is to balance the paying patients against the free patients under the totality of circumstances test,
and it has looked
to other factors.
We do not look at the fact that the Medicaid or Medicare program reimburses far below the actual cost, so that the $250,000 loss wouldn't qualify as part of the charitable care?
I have several responses to that point, Your Honor. First and foremost, as the BTA said specifically in its decision, there's absolutely no proof in the record that Medicaid and Medicare reimburse below costs. The applicant had ample opportunity to present financial evidence to the BTA to that effect if it was true.
Well,
and
if their sole source of income generally tends to be the Medicare, Medicaid provisions, and they're operating at a loss, that's pretty simple math.
The only facility that they identified as operating at a loss was the Westchester facility. And there is a reason for that that has absolutely nothing to do with its Medicare, Medicaid source of reimbursement. As their regional supervisor clearly testified, Westchester was located in a community that was just the opposite of targeting the poor and indigent. It is an upscale, affluent community, and the dynamics that occur in such a community is that people that can afford it go and get a kidney transplant. They do not go through a dialysis regimen. In fact, the only reason, per the testimony in the record, as to why this particular clinic is there is as a favor to the University of Cincinnati, because the University of Cincinnati wanted to target this community for further expansion of its services. Otherwise, it's doubtful that there ever would be one in Westchester. And in fact, if we look at the other locations that DC High has in the Cincinnati community, where the level of poverty is higher, they're extremely successful clinics that make a profit.
All right, Council, would you revisit that? The university wants a dialysis center there, even though there's a population that normally would opt for a transplant as opposed to long-term dialysis. So this is never going to be a facility that is truly going to treat the indigent. How does that make sense?
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. And it appears that it's almost a lost leader that was put there because university hospitals wanted a full-service medical complex up in Westchester. When we look at the other dynamics, again, in the Cincinnati area, where the facilities that are located in less affluent areas, they all made a profit. And nationally, DCI made a profit. In the year 2004, which is the year in which they applied, they made $32 million in profits.
You're saying they made profits, but they're a nonprofit association. What did they do with the $32 million?
They never documented that to the satisfaction of the BTA. So the BTA found that they failed to meet their burden of proof. They represented that a portion of it went to donate service or time and money to other entities that performed research.
Are you intimating that they actually distributed it as profits to somebody? I don't know.
All we know is that they distributed it to somebody, because what we have is a line item on a 990 that they made contributions to research. They admit themselves they didn't do any research of their own. So what we have is, at best, a vicarious charitable claim, which this court has often rejected when an entity tries to claim its charitable status based upon donations it's made to someone else. For-profit corporations make donations to charity as well. They are not charities. We have another problem with the research donation claim by DCI, and that is the fact that the General Assembly has specifically addressed the issue of when an entity that wants a charitable exemption can get one for research, and that is under 5709.12d1. And that requires that the principal purpose of the applicant has to be conducting research. They clearly don't meet that test.
So I'd like to direct your attention to this this issue between policy of the organization, their practice, of the organization, and this issue of a quantum, a measurable quantum of free care. Now, it's been asserted that Ohio law, as far as the real estate tax exemption, in terms of definition of charity, is satisfied if the policy, and I'm assuming the actual practice, is to provide services of some nature without regard to ability to pay. And in your argument, or at least the BTA's argument, seems to be, well, that isn't sufficient. You actually have to show that you have a sort of a threshold for this. And so I'd like you to address that. The corporation, the organization here has a policy of not, or reserving the right not to provide care without regard to ability to pay, perhaps a practice of serving anyone anyway. And then there's the issue about, do you have to show a certain amount of that, even if nobody presents themselves?
Yes, Your Honor. And I would first start with noting what counsel for DCI has conceded. They have a terrible charity care policy, if that's what they actually intend. It's not a charity care policy. It's a bad debt policy that's set up as to when they're going to write off certain uncollected debts as bad debt, for which they will receive reimbursement from Medicare. It says on its face, this is not charity care. It says on its face that we reserve the right to turn people away.
Is that the end of the question here, then, for real estate tax exemption that is not a charity, then? Is that,
it's that the start, Your Honor. It's not the position? End, because what the court has said on many occasions, it's not a piece of paper that determines whether or not you're eligible for a charitable exemption. It's what you actually do. And the court has said that over and over again. They said it last year in Northeast Ohio Psychiatric. Just earlier this year, the court recognized the proper denial of an exemption for subsidized low-income housing. That was a 501c3 organization with a nice piece of paper.
Does that work in the way that they're asserting as well, that they say they don't have a policy that or allows any provision of care without ability to pay, but then in practice they do? So should we look at their practice rather than the policy? Is that your argument?
It's what the court has said, Your Honor. We have to look at the actual activities of the organization to determine its status for exemption. And that applies not only to the use of the property under 12, but whether or not the institution is a charitable institution under point 121.
So we should just disregard what their policy says then?
It's certainly something that goes into the equation.
If there is a practice, in fact, they do accept without regard to ability to pay.
It's the start. I think in order to finish the analysis, one has to look at the actual activities. And what this organization has acknowledged, they operate under a universal care system that's been in operation since 1972. They knew the minute they opened the doors, they'd be paid for every patient that walked through the door. That is not an act of charity. With respect to their earnings, again, every other location they've identified in the area, with the exception of this one, which has exceptional circumstances, makes money. They acknowledge they do not operate any different than their for-profit competitors. As a matter of fact, in this particular industry, which in Ohio we have 250 dialysis clinics, the majority of them are for-profit. Obviously, if this was a losing proposition, they would not be in the business. They have the same reimbursement systems, the same clientele as DCI does.
Counsel, I assume the majority, maybe most hospitals in the state are not for profit.
That's correct, Your Honor.
What is it about this case And I assume that most of them are qualifying for tax exemption for real estate purposes.
It's all conditioned, Your Honor, on the question of whether or not they're providing free care.
Okay, well, are some being taxed and some not? Or
There are proceedings currently before the Board of Tax Appeals where hospitals have been denied exemptions by the tax commissioner based upon the de minimis level of free care they're providing.
Okay, let me back you up. Historically, up to this point, have the nonprofit hospitals enjoyed tax exemption for real estate tax purposes?
Some have, some haven't. Obviously, Cleveland Osteopathic, back in the 40s, is an example of a hospital that was denied an exemption, despite the fact it was a 501c3 nonprofit tax-exempt organization.
No, some have and some haven't is about as imprecise as an answer as you could give. You have some sense. Are the bulk of the hospitals in this state enjoying real estate tax exemption?
Historically, so long as they meet the historical test for charity, yes, they've been receiving tax exemptions. But what's coming to light now in light of the change in reimbursement systems and the fact that hospitals are becoming paid for the services that they provide is that that's changing. It's changing just like this court recognized in Clark v. Southview Hospital in dealing with charitable immunity, that immunity, just like real property exemptions, was based upon the historical nature of hospitals, that they were almshouses for the poor, that they had a substantial patient base that involved indigent people.
So where I'm trying to get to is that the Ohio Hospitals Association's concern with this case is not unfounded, that the tax commissioner has embarked upon a process to review each and every nonprofit hospital in this state's claim of real estate tax exemption as a charitable operation, and that's under review across the board, and that's apparently something fairly new.
It's under review, Your Honor, but I can tell you I have had access to information that isn't in the record here that would show that the majority of hospitals in this state do provide reasonable levels of charity care. So the concern, if there's a concern out there, is for the outlier hospitals that are not doing so.
So is there a formula that's being used to determine, based on the number of patients that come through the door, amount of services, amount of billables, what's the formula for determining whether there's a sufficient amount of charitable, pure charitable, unreimbursed, free service?
Your Honor, at this time, the department is looking at each application the way this court has directed it to do so on a case-by-case basis. Are they looking at certain criteria, and is that in the developmental stage? I would say that's a reasonable, correct statement. But what I'm basing my opinion on is data that's be provided on an annual basis to the Ohio Department of Jobs and Family Services, where hospitals report their levels of charity care. So it's public available data.
Okay,
does show, with respect to the majority of hospitals, that there's a reasonable amount of charity care being provided.
So you're using the word reasonable, and reasonable is a moving target depending on the institution.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. What does this decision, if we agree with the Board of Tax Appeals and uphold this, affirm this, what does this do to the other locations for DCI?
Those aren't obviously before the court or before the tax commissioner at this point in time, so it would be pure speculation as to what would happen with respect to them.
Well, does it?
Whether a given county auditor would elect to try to place a particular facility that might have previously received an exemption back on the tax rolls, that is pure speculation.
So they would have to go through the same test that we just described, and a reasonable amount of indigent service would have to be shown, which is basically what this case is all about.
It really is, Your Honor. And again, not to make light of this issue, this court has said this in probably 10 decisions over 100 years. Each time health care is looked at, one of the foremost concerns that the court looked at is, are they actually providing care to the folks who could otherwise not afford it? And when we reach a position where you receive third-party reimbursement, you are no longer doing that.
Mr. Pratt, the Board of Tax Appeals made a determination in page 16 of its decision. We're unable to find the write-offs charitable because federal law prohibits DCI from providing charitable care to any patients insured by Medicare.
I actually think that's a misnomer, Your Honor, because my investigation shows that Medicare does not prevent you from providing charity care where you so elect. Actually, you have the option. You can treat the care as bad debt, in which case you may be eligible for reimbursement by Medicare, or you can genuinely declare that the care is free of charge, which means you're eating the cost of providing the service, in which case you're not eligible for reimbursement.
But there's no evidence in our record that anyone was denied care at this clinic because of an inability to pay.
Nor is there evidence that anyone walked through the doors who would have been eligible to receive free
care. But the answer to my question is there isn't any evidence that anyone was denied anything, right?
That's correct. But if you're working in an environment where that's not ever likely to occur, of course there would be no evidence to that effect.
But this
and if everyone in America gets health insurance in the future, then presumably there would be some form of reimbursement for all medical care, regardless of what kind of institution administered it, and then they'd all be no longer charitable and subject to tax. Is that the ultimate goal where we're going here?
The goal of whom, I would guess, would be the question.
No, you said there's a policy under review in answer to Justice Pfeiffer, and the bottom line would be, if I understood your argument is that if there's any form of reimbursement, then it's not charity, and therefore the property will be taxable in Ohio.
That is potentially the outcome.
And if everyone has health insurance and every service is compensated in some degree, then there isn't any charitable medical care.
I think we have to be
Do you agree with that, or is that am I missing it?
It is conceivable. It's obviously not the facts as it stands today. There's commentary out there that says even after universal health care, there will be candidates out there who do not have insurance and would still be eligible for this kind of free care.
Consul, I'm interested in bringing you back to this standard that's under review, and I think various members of the court have asked, how much is enough? And you said, well, the tax commissioner is proceeding pursuant to the direction of this court. Well, I've been on this court for a long time, and prior to that, I was on the Ways and Means Committee in the legislature. I don't recall any specific case in which we gave precise direction as to the amount of charity that had to be exhibited in order to qualify, either here or in the legislature.
And I would agree with that, Your Honor, and I believe that's what I indicated earlier.
So the tax commissioner's proceeding ad hoc at this point.
The tax commissioner is looking at parameters. At this point, I don't think the tax commissioner has developed a figure that this is the absolute figure that has to be obtained.
So what the holding of this case should be what? And how would that be instructive in terms of this overall review that has all the hospitals quaking at this point?
Well, we would request the court to hold that at a minimum, some level of free care has to be provided by a healthcare facility to qualify. You have to donate something to mankind to be a charity. And if you're not doing that, you can't possibly obtain an exemption, particularly when we look at real property exemptions, which are supposed to be construed narrowly against the applicant. I would go beyond that by saying, obviously, it has to be the facts of each case, which is what the court has already held on many occasions.
Well, do you look at, for example, it is possible to be a tax-exempt operation and pay outrageous salaries to management. Are those kinds of things in the mix? In other words, they're taking advantage of the federal tax code, but in reality, it's just a sweet deal for the people who put the whole thing together?
Oh, I think absolutely that has to be considered. I think, again, you have to start with free care, and obviously you work from there looking at these other circumstances that the court has labeled totality of circumstances.
But they say that's not the case here. They say the salaries are very reasonable, below market, and some serve free.
And that did not become an issue, I can tell you, from their 990. Their top five employees make combined over $1 million a year. Whether that's reasonable or not, I don't believe that was ever contested before the BTA.
What's five and 2 million? 200,000 each?
I know one was making about $350, but again, I don't believe that's been made the issue here in this particular case. What was the issue was whether or not, again, they lose money on Medicaid and Medicare. As the BTA said, they didn't prove it. What was at issue was their donations to research. As the BTA said, they didn't prove it. And in any event, it was money they gave someone else to actually conduct the research. They didn't do it themselves. So they really didn't differentiate themselves from for-profit.
There's a difference in our case law between somebody who makes a contribution versus somebody who gives all of their profits to research, isn't there?
Well, they did not give all their profits to research, Your Honor. They testified that at least half of them are turned back into their own capital expansion. So they, OHA cites Akron Gulf Charities as an example of an institution or an entity that got an exemption because they turned over all their money. This isn't Akron Gulf Charities. For one, that was a sales tax exemption, which is subject to a different standard. And secondly, this entity did not turn over all of its net profits to charity. The difference, again, between the two is this entity operates a business. Akron Gulf Charities was an event. So there is really a lot of distinction there. This is more like the Northeast Ohio psychiatric case where one charity tried to claim, or alleged charity tried to claim, that because of its affiliation with another and the fact that its profits inured to another, we could overlook the fact that they were running a business and that the profits were being forwarded on to another 501c3 not-for-profit entity. The court rejected that idea, again, because that's a vicarious claim to charity. This court has always said that the entity who's claiming the exemption must actually be conducting the alleged charitable activity themselves.
Mr. Pratt, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Cowan, do you have a brief reference to the record for Justice O'Connor?
The testimony regarding taking a patient through dialysis, even though they hadn't filled out the paperwork, can be found at page 175 of the actual transcript of the hearing.
So that is someone who was presented to the Westchester facility and was neither reimbursed by federal dollars or had the ability to pay themselves?
I didn't realize your question was specific to Westchester. This person showed up at the Walnut Hills facility, refused to fill out paperwork, and was treated through dialysis.
But that's not the property that is at subject here.
No, it's not, Your Honor. And I didn't
but you don't have an example of someone who shows up at this location under those circumstances?
I do not, Your Honor. No, that's not in the record.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Callan.
Thank you.
The court will take a brief